Going Linux, episode 33, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Going Linux is designed to provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use Linux and Linux applications to get things done. If you're new to Linux, moving to Linux, or just thinking about going Linux, then this is the podcast for you.
In our user experience episodes, we take 2 months to cover a topic. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts.
During month two, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective, for users of Linux building their confidence and competence with the operating system. Between user experience episodes, we have listener feedback episodes, like this one.
We hope that you'll find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and using it to get things done.
Our first feedback is from listener Mark. Hi, Mark. And he sends us this audio file.
Larry and Tom, this is Mark Vanderberg from South Bend, Indiana. I just like to say how much I enjoy your show. I'm not a full-time Linux user. I've played around with Linux for quite a few years now, just basically trying them out and back and forth. I've been listening to the different Linux podcasts since I think Linux Reality first started. Was my first podcast I really started listening to, which really got me more interested in Linux. And I'm not a full-time user, like I said, but even though I'm still a Windows and Vista and XP user, basically because I'm a Windows technician instead of a PC technician, I help a lot of people out with their problems and things like that. But I find myself now encouraging others to try to use Linux, especially customers that I have that have reoccurring problems with viruses and spyware and things like that. So I've been trying to find a really user-friendly Linux distribution because I'm not real strong in it myself. I'm looking for something that would be really easy for my customers to use, just to surf the internet and maybe play some CDs and DVDs. And I've always found it to be a problem sometimes to get, MP3 support working and DVD playback and things like that. And what I have been installing lately is the new Mandriva 2008.1 on some systems, and it seems like people really, really like that. Especially people that like it more are ones that are really not strong Windows users in the first place. They just kind of get in and do poke around, get some things done, but they're not really into what the operating system is. So it doesn't really make much of a difference. Everything's kind of, see, as long as it works for them. They're kind of the ones that don't really touch it. They're not real techie, and they don't really mess with anything. They just want to be able to do a few small things. But my question is for you is I have a real problem as far as applications. You know, with all the different names of all the Linux applications and things like that, I really don't know what the best applications are for each specific thing that maybe somebody would want to do. And I've tried playing around with, you know, different ones, and I'm not really sure which ones are really the best of the breed and which ones are the newest. Is there some sort of a resource on the internet that I haven't been able to find that really kind of is a rating system and reviews of different Linux programs so that it would kind of help me when I'm setting a system up for someone to kind of have the best? I mean, I pretty much know Firefox and things like that for the internet, but you know, what would be a good BitTorrent client? What would be a good CD burning client? What would be a good image burning client? What would be the best programs out there to do it? You know, and what would be the easiest way to get DVD playback working for somebody, or ripping CDs and things like that? Those are the kind of things that I'm looking for. If you could help me out, because I basically I have a spare system here that I use to test a lot of things for the Windows environment. I have multiple hard drives I can pull out and pull in and different things. And I have a couple different Linux distributions that I can plug in and use. And I find them for myself personally. You know, if I wanted to go to a place that I'm not really too sure if the website's very secure, I'll pop in one of the drawers with a hard drive in it and go over there and surf over to, you know, whatever the website is, you know, using Linux and stuff like that. And I find myself using it more and more myself, but because I'm working on computers all the time for other people, I need to keep up to date with Windows and things like that. But, you know, if you could kind of help me out as far as what the suggestions are for different applications or where to go, I would very much appreciate it. And the other thing is I find kind of a turnoff really on all the Linux podcasts for the most part. Is I know some of you are from a background of Windows and Mac, and I find it in all of the podcasts really that you really Windows bashing a lot, and I find it a turnoff because that you still have to be very techie in Linux. Somebody's gonna, you know, unless somebody's setting it up for you and getting it all going, I find myself a very technical person, and I find myself problems. I'm actually this morning here, I just had a Kubuntu basically crash on me, and I have no idea why. So it's not that it's totally stable. There's a lot of things in there I can't get working and stuff like that, even being a very techie guy. So that would probably be the only thing I would say that I don't like very much. You know, I think people that are seeking out other alternatives are going to do that, whether, you know, the Linux evangelists are bashing Windows or not. So maybe a little less bashing. Thank you, and very much enjoy the show.
To summarize, Mark had a couple of questions, actually. He wants to know what are the best applications to recommend to new Linux users where he's installing Linux on their hard drives for them. And we do have some recommendations for him.
Sure.
And he's talked about getting specific applications working like DVD playback. And he finds the Windows bashing a little bit much on Linux podcasts, a bit of a turnoff. So
Can I address that one?
Okay, go for it.
Okay. Back in the day, I considered myself something of a Windows expert as well. I was helping people out all the time.
Sure.
And I would not appreciate people that were bashing Windows because that was where my expertise was. Once you step over the line and move over to the other side here, as you look back, you can't help but revel in the fact that so many of the old problems are gone. That so much that you were putting up with is just gone. There's no more disk fragmentation. There's almost no virus problems. It's just nice over here. So I'm sorry. Yeah, Windows has become a little bit of a dirty word to me. Just because I'm looking back over my shoulder and seeing where I was and wondering why I didn't get over here sooner. Now, as far as selecting what is the best application for anything that you want to do, we have a whole bunch of nice links for you. But here's really what the problem is. Before, you were stepping up to the cafeteria lady and she was saying, do you want a burger or pizza? And your choice of soup is chicken or mushroom. And that's it. And you didn't really have much to decide. Now you're walking up to a really big buffet. And so while you can get some guidance, you really have to decide by yourself. For BitTorrent, I really like something that's not even open source. It's really made for Windows, so I have to run it under Wine. But it's called MicroTorrent. It's spelled with the funny little U with tails on both sides. So if you look it up on Google, it's uTorrent, U-T-O-R-R-E-N-T. For CD burning and image burning, K3B. Try that. You're going to love it.
I would agree with that.
For playing DVDs, try MPlayer, that's MPlayer, or VLC, that's Victor Lima Charlie. One of those should do it for you. And CD ripping? Well, that's not legal. We're not even going to talk about that. K3B. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I would agree with those choices. However, you know, there are a lot of people with a lot of different tastes out there, and each individual distribution of Linux, generally speaking, comes with some sort of application pre-installed for doing each of those things. Perhaps not all of them will have a BitTorrent client, but they will have it in their repositories somewhere. Not all of them will have, let's say, money management software installed by default, but it will be somewhere in the repositories. And generally speaking, if you want to find out which applications are available for your distribution that have been tested and vetted, if you will, by your distribution, you go to the package manager, whatever that is for your distribution, and search for not the name of the program, because you don't know what the name of the program is, but rather what the function of the program is.
Sure.
So if you want a torrent client, you search for torrent. If you want a CD burning application, you search CD burning or just burning. And so it takes a little bit of getting used to. You need to think a little bit differently when you're using Linux than you do when you're using Windows, but you can find it. If you want other people's recommendations, Mark, as Tom just said, we have a number of links we'll include in the show notes to some sites that give you some alternatives and give you some recommendation. There's an UbuntuLinuxHelp.com link for the top 100 of the best useful open source applications. Of course, that's in their opinion.
Right.
There is a site called osalt.com. And I forget what that stands for right now. But let's see what else. Archlinux.org, bbs.archlinux.org has an article I'll include a link to. The Bellevue, Washington Linux Users Group, BellevueLinux.org, has an application list of various Linux applications and their equivalents under Windows. And softpedia.com provides all kinds of downloads for not only Linux software, but Windows and Mac software too. They have not only software that you can download, but they also provide reviews of Linux software on their site. And I'll provide a link to that too in the show notes. Thanks,
Excellent.
Mark. Yeah. Our next email is an audio file attachment from Len. Let's play Len's audio file.
Hi, my name is Len. I'm in Indianapolis, Indiana. I really enjoy your podcasts. I listen and re-listen to them often at work. You put out much good information, and I like the format of the show. I'm not a full-blown Linux user yet. I've toyed with some of the distributions in the past, but don't currently have a box that I would run Linux on. I would like to get one or two set up at my wife's business for servers, as she has a static IP address at her shop. I'm not sure what you will be covering further in your backups podcast, but I presume that you will be getting around to presenting some information on Restoral. Would you mind taking a few moments to discuss the differences between full backups, differential backups, and incremental backups, and what the advantages and disadvantages of each are, especially during the restore process, and under which circumstances the different ones would be best used? We have been doing incremental backups, and that leaves a new additional file every time we do one. If I'm not mistaken, at the point that we will inevitably do a restore, it will require the original full backups plus all of the incremental backup files. This seems to be a time-consuming process. What would happen if one of the incremental backup files becomes corrupt? Will the entire restore fail? Thanks for all your good work, information, and dedication. By the way, I mentioned that my wife has her own business, has her own shop. If you want to edit this out, you're welcome to, and I won't be offended. But if anybody's interested in seeing what she does, they can go to www.shirleycooley.com. That's S-H-I-R-L-E-Y-C-O-O-L-E-Y.com. www.shirleycooley.com. Thanks.
Well, Len, thanks very much for the voice message. We
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Regarding backups, obviously Len had sent this in to us before we recorded the advanced backups episode, so we've already covered the definitions of differential backups and incremental backups and some of the other things that Len had asked about. But one of the things he asked for was an explanation of what happens if one of the incremental backups becomes corrupt. And that shouldn't be a problem. You do need, as Len Yu suggested, you do need the full backup in order to restore your files to their original condition. However, if one of the incremental backups gets corrupted, what happens is you are able to use the incremental backups that you do have and restore any information that's on those.
Yeah, plus you'll probably have a menu so that if the file has changed over time, you can go back and pick out the date and look at that file and see if you want to restore it.
Exactly. So, it depends on which backup and restore software you're using, how that actually works. But generally speaking, you have a full backup, and then each of the incremental backups you can use to restore your system to a particular date. So each of the incremental backups will have a date on them. And if one gets corrupted, you just skip that one.
And if I'm not mistaken, the difference between differential backups and incremental backups is nothing, right?
That's my understanding as well, and that's what we explained in the last episode. So I do believe they are the same.
Okay, well, thanks, Len. Hope that helps.
Yes, and thanks for the link to your wife's site. We'll check that out. All right, now for our listener email. We've had an awful lot of emails since our last listener feedback episode, Tom, and I'm not sure we're going to get through it all.
No, we don't want to stretch the show out too long, but we can always make sure that we come back and pick up what we dropped.
Yes, if you're a listener who wrote us and your email doesn't make it into this episode, we'll hold on to it until next month, or I may read one or two of your emails during my next appearance on Computer America show. In the meantime, normally, we respond to emails as soon as we receive them, so chances are, if you've written to us, you've already received an email response anyway.
I might mangle this person's name, my apologies. Per Lindstrom. Where's Per from?
I think it's a Swedish name, if I'm not mistaken. And I might be mistaken.
Okay. Per says, in episode 28... Byron asked, which was the best Linux distribution to use? A site devoted to that task is the Linux Distribution Chooser. And he has a link and another link. And there are other, he says, there are other distribution choosers if you Google Linux Distribution Chooser. Oh, that's a good idea.
Absolutely. Some very excellent resources there. Thanks. I've checked both of the links out, and they walk you through various user scenarios in choosing your Linux distribution. Both of these sites would actually be a good help to our next listener as well.
Oh, by the way, we're going to have these links in our show notes.
Of course.
And our next email is from Robert. Hi, Robert. He says, hey, Larry and Tom, how you guys doing?
We're doing just fine.
Robert says, I just recently came across your podcast on May 25th, and I love it. I subscribed to your podcast and now have all of them on my MP3 player, and I listen to them daily. That might be podcast overload there, pal.
Maybe so, but yeah. We appreciate your listenership.
Yeah. I'm a newbie when it comes to Linux. I'm going to be installing Linux on my old Toshiba Satellite 2520 CDS laptop. Currently, it's running Windows 98, but I think that it's time to go to Linux. What version would you suggest? Also, I've been downloading a bunch of distros of Linux to try the live CD and see which version I'd like to have on my spare computer. My main computer still runs Windows Vista as I run a Call of Duty clan, that's a game, and need Windows to run the game. I like the idea of having two computers so that I can try different things on the spare one. Which Linux distro would you recommend for my spare desktop computer? Thanks in advance for your help and suggestions, and keep up the great podcast. Maybe one day Linux will rule the world. Robert. Thanks, Robert.
Robert, I'm glad that you found our podcast. Thanks for subscribing. Before I get into the recommendation for a distribution, let me be sure of your configuration. My research shows that the Toshiba Satellite 2520 CDS has an AMD K6-2
nice.
300 megahertz processor. It comes standard with 32 megabytes of RAM, but you can put up to 96 megabytes in it. It comes standard with a 4 gigabyte hard drive, which is plenty large enough for your average Linux distribution. The display is 800 by 600 at 16 million colors. That display card supports up to 1280 by 1024 resolution as well. Although there are Linux distributions that would run on 32 megabytes of RAM, I would strongly recommend that if you haven't done so already, that you add the additional 64 megabytes of RAM to bring it up to the maximum of 96. That will greatly improve your computing experience, whether you decide to stick with Windows 98, move to Linux, or dual boot Linux with Windows 98. As I said, a 4 gigabyte hard drive will provide you with plenty of space, provided that you've got some empty space left on it to install Linux. Of course, if you're going to be wiping out the entire Windows installation or replacing it with Linux, then you'll have the whole drive to yourself with Linux. There are several distributions of Linux that will install on older models of computer. My first recommendation would be to try Xubuntu. That's X-U-B-U-N-T-U.
Yeah, that's what I would have said too.
Yeah, it comes on a live CD. I've installed Xubuntu on an older Windows 98 computer, and it worked great. It's a lot like its extremely popular big brother, Ubuntu. I'll have a link in our show notes to the information on the Ubuntu site about Xubuntu for you. I've also successfully installed Puppy Linux and DSL, Damn Small Linux, on some very old computers. Although I don't use either of them anymore, they're both quite usable and fairly powerful. Neither is my first choice recommendation unless your PC is so underpowered that even Xubuntu wouldn't run. DSL is actually so small it can even be run from a USB memory stick. DSL has a more full-featured version as well called DSL-N that is still small but more capable than the standard DSL. There are other distributions for older hardware too, but I have first-hand experience only with Puppy and DSL. For example, Debris Linux is a new Linux distribution we mentioned on a show a few episodes back. We haven't really tried it yet, but it's supposed to be designed specifically for use on older hardware. I'll have a link to the Debris site as well. One last thing that you might find interesting is a site like one of the two that our last listener provided that walks you through selecting a Linux distribution by answering a few questions about how you use your computer. These distribution selectors are not perfect, and there are several of them on the internet, but you can try one of those other two, or just for giggles, you can try one at zgeniestudios.net. I'll include a link to that one as well. Thanks for the feedback, and thanks for listening.
And Robert wrote us back. He said, thank you very much for your reply. I've managed to get Damn Small Linux to run on the Toshiba laptop. It took me some time, but I was able to figure it out. Now, my next big thing is to try to configure my wireless PCM CIA card so that I can connect to the internet. I also have a wired PCM CIA card that I could use if necessary. Also, I have just set up my main computer to dual boot both Windows Vista and Mandriva. Mandriva is a beautiful operating system and very easy to install and set up for dual boot. I also have a spare desktop computer that I'm going to dual boot two different distros of Linux on. I must say that for a free operating system, it is awesome. If only you could run mainstream programs on it, then I think Microsoft and Apple might be out of business. Thanks for everything, and keep up the great work.
That sounds great, Robert. I'm glad things are working out for you. Sounds like you've gone well into the Linux world, and I think that once you've had a little more experience, you'll find that the Linux applications are mainstream applications.
Yeah, if you had started out on Linux and you tried Microsoft for the first time, you'd be wishing for your mainstream Linux applications.
Yeah, it's all a matter of perspective.
Right. And I wasn't Windows bashing there.
No.
Okay, and now Anthony writes. Oh, by the way, hi, Anthony. I'm running Ubuntu 7.10. For example, I want the latest version of Transmission and Pidgin. It seems to me my only option is to compile by source, which I tried and ran into dependency hell. Any tips?
Well, Anthony, thanks for the email. And at the time you wrote in, we were just on the brink of the introduction of Hardy Heron. And as a result, the Gutsy repositories didn't contain the latest versions of everything that was that is now available for Hardy Heron, including the latest version of Pidgin. Canonical's effort just before introducing the next version of their distribution is obviously being put into getting that next version out the door with the latest and greatest software packages, and that's why you weren't getting the updates. They should be available for Hardy. They may actually have a backport to Gutsy for the Pidgin application, if you haven't already upgraded to Hardy, that is. With Ubuntu's six-month release cycle, the longest you'll ever have to wait to get back on the cutting edge by upgrading to the next version is 6 months. In reality, for at least the first half of that time, many of the packages are continuously updated. So the actual time that you're running old versions, old in quotations, is much less than that six-month period of time. At least it's not like, well, I'm about to Windows bash here.
Oh, no.
At least it's not like Microsoft Windows release cycle of every 10 years or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I've heard that they're intending to release Windows version 7, I guess it is, fairly shortly within the next year or two, if I remember correctly. We'll wait and see.
We'll see how many video cards and sound cards that disables.
Yeah, I've heard that they're going to completely rewrite the kernel, or at least there's some rumor of that, and they may actually be in the situation that Apple was when they went from OS 9 to OS 10, where they have to provide a virtual version of the old Windows in order to run the older applications until those applications can be rewritten for the new version. So that could actually cause some frustration on the part of Windows users trying to upgrade and maybe some more converts to Linux. Who knows?
There you go.
Yeah. Moving on to our next email. It's from Paul. Paul writes, "Hi, guys. I have started listening to your podcast. Find them very useful. I was a Windows user for about 10 years or so and then switched to Mac OS X about 2 years ago and have just purchased the new Asus Triple E PC, which, or the EPC, which I believe to be a Zandros Linux. Was thinking you could do a podcast on how to install new applications and general use. Anyhow, keep up the good work. Love the podcast."
Hey, Paul, thanks a lot for the email. Congratulations on your EPC, and welcome to the world of Linux. I know you just found our podcast, so I'm going to refer you back to episode 13 and episode 15 of our show. There we discussed getting software updates and installing new applications. I think you'll find them to be what you're looking for. We also have an application note on our website that might help, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. And if you want exact instructions on how to do it on a Triple E PC, just send me one, and I'll figure it out and tell you. And don't hesitate to write back if you need more help, buddy. We're here for you.
Yes. Well, our next email is from Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Bob writes, "Hi, guys. I recently discovered your podcast, and I'm enjoying it very much. I'm a newbie. I started using PC Linux OS a little over a year ago, and I love it." He has love in all capital letters, so he must really love it.
I think so.
Yeah. "I'm experimenting with all the applications and have made some progress with the command line work. It's not as scary as I thought it would be. One question. What is that bumper music you used on episodes 19 and 21 and others between segments? I remember one of my first distributions I checked out also had that music as its startup theme. It's bugging me as I cannot remember which one. Thanks, and keep up the great work, Bob."
Well, Bob, that's actually me and my garage band, and we play it live every time. No, wait, no. It's a default audio file that you get if you're running Kubuntu and the Feisty Fawn version of Kubuntu. And you can find it in /share/sounds/intro-3-long.ogg. And now Larry's going to look at his current version of Kubuntu and see if it's still there in the later versions.
Well, I can do that. Let me see. You know what? I know it's not on Hardy because I looked for it on Hardy, but I have a Gutsy machine here. Let me just take a quick look. So in Gutsy, it's not there, and in Hardy, it's not there. So it must have been a file that was particular to the Feisty Fawn distribution.
Okay, next email is from David. Hey, David. Hey, Larry and Tom. Hey, David. "I've been listening to your podcast since episode one. Ooh. Your show is interesting and easy to follow with your clear instructions. By the way, are you planning to do a shell scripting basics and advanced topics in the near future?"
So thanks, David, for the email, for the suggestion about a command line episode. Yes, we've thought about an episode on scripting basics. In fact, Tom's found an excellent tutorial on it that will be an invaluable resource in developing that episode. In the meantime, check out the article. I'll have a link in the show notes.
Yeah, that's right. We have been thinking about doing a basic shell scripting episode. However, at this point, we really can't do an advanced one because neither of us is advanced. I'm sticking my toes in the water. I'm having fun with it. It's a ball. But there's no way. My scripts are ugly, but they work. So as far as advanced topics, we might need to wait a little bit on that one.
Or get some help.
Or get some help.
Yeah. Our next email is from Jonathan. Hi, Jonathan.
Hey.
"I wrote you about backing up programs in Ubuntu. I just wanted to let you know about the program I found. It's called Apt on CD. It's in the Package Manager. It will save all of your programs that you've installed in Ubuntu, but not your settings for the programs.
Oh.
You would have to save your home directory, which holds those settings. When you go to reinstall the CD you've burned, you must make sure that Apt on CD is already loaded so you can restore your programs and then put them back in your home directory. And your settings will be restored."
Excellent.
"The other program I found is Clonezilla. You can find it on DistroWatch. And that's, of course, the one that we reviewed last time."
Sure.
"And Jonathan writes, it's just like a Norton Ghost that is a live CD. I've not used it, but it seems like it works well. Thanks, Jonathan."
Yeah, thank you for your feedback, Jonathan. And Larry has been using Clonezilla and likes it a lot.
I do, yes.
And as we said, we discussed that in our last user experience episode, number 31. But Apt on CD, that's a new one on me.
Mm-hmm, me too.
I'll have to take a look at that.
Actually, Jonathan, I heard Peter and Harlem mention something similar on episode 71 of the Fresh Ubuntu podcast. I'm not sure that it was Apt on CD, though. It was how to share updates across multiple computers. I'll find links to that show and include it in the show notes.
Okay, next up, Colin writes, "Hi, guys." Hi, Colin. "I was listening to your podcast number 29 on making backups. Can I suggest a really great program called Parted Magic?" Hey, I've got it, buddy. "It's a live CD which can run in system RAM or from the CD. It includes a lot of useful utilities, including PartImage, a utility which saves partitions to an image file." And Colin gives us a link there that we'll put in the show notes. "Thanks for some great podcasts. Regards, Colin." And Colin, I did try that Parted Magic, and as a matter of fact, I burned the CD for it, and it really does look pretty good.
Yes, I've got a partition program. I think it was GParted that was on a CD as well. Maybe it was Parted Magic, but I've used it from the CD. I don't even remember what it was, but I've used it, and it worked really well. And thanks for the suggestion, Colin.
And now we come to Kim. Hi, guys. Hi, Kim. You should say hello, too, Larry.
Hi, Kim.
Okay, that's better. Linux newbie here. I've been fighting with Linux on and off for the last couple years. I've fallen back to Windows after a few months of struggling with different issues, but this time is different. I've been running Ubuntu for 2 or 3 months now, and I'm very happy about it. One of the important things that keeps me going on Ubuntu and not falling back to Windows this time is definitely listening to your podcast.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
Yeah. I really like your podcast, and I almost can't wait to hear the upcoming episode about iPod syncing under Linux that you mentioned in episode 28 would be a coming topic later on. I have a third-generation iPod Nano myself and haven't been able to find anything for Linux close to the user-friendliness of iTunes, especially when it comes to synchronizing podcasts. Keep up the good work. Regards, Tim." Okay, well, thanks for the very high praise, Kim. We're glad you're enjoying the podcast, and we hope that the upcoming podcast about syncing iPods and other media players is going to be a good one.
I'm happy, Kim, that you have found our podcast useful. I wanted to let you know that the episode on using your iPod with Linux is scheduled for the end of June, maybe episode 34 or so. Be patient. It's on its way. Thanks for listening to our podcast.
And we had other email about iPods, yes?
Yes, yes, indeed. Dan wrote us. He says, "Hi, guys." Hi, Dan.
Hey, Dan.
"In your latest episode, number 28, you can tell how old these are, you fielded questions about using an iPod with Linux. I'm running Ubuntu 7.04 and had lots of problems working with my new third generation 8GB Nano. The solution was Flula. It's a total iPod manager, including playlist, cover art, and podcast, and works great. Plus, it runs right inside the iPod, which is just kind of cool. Though I'd love to access my iPod with a great program like Amarok, which I use to manage my music collection, Flula absolutely works for me. I hope this can help some of your other frustrated listeners. P.S. Great show."
Oh, that sounds cool. I don't actually have an iPod. I've got another brand of player.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't try this out, so we're going to have to take Dan's word for it. You have an iPod, don't you, Larry?
I do. Maybe I'll give it a try as we prepare for the iPod episode.
Excellent. Yeah, and I also asked Dan about, I know about Rockbox. I don't know about Flula, and I'm wondering if Flula is kind of similar to Rockbox.
Kind of sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah. And it almost looks like Flula can connect to the web through your computer and grab podcasts, but the docs are a little sketchy. That would be so cool if it could do that.
Yes, definitely. And our next email is from John. He writes, "Hello, Tom and Larry."
Hello, John.
Hello, John. "Just heard you on Computer America show, and now you have another fan. Really like your approach to your show. Very informative, concise, with good advice and how-tos. I found the best tutorial on installing Linux, Ubuntu 7.10, I've ever found anywhere. He provides a link, and we'll include the link in the show notes. It's to the Kim Komando site. He continues in his email, Kim Komando has a site with message boards. One has to subscribe to post there, though. Courant is a member and put up a post that detailed Ubuntu installation with VMware server. I followed his tutorial and it worked perfectly. I've always been so frustrated with Linux since it was so difficult to understand and use. Now that VMware is easy to use and free, you don't have the problems and dangers in trashing your system by installing a Linux distribution. Sounds like he had some problems.
I think so.
Uh-huh. One thing that seems to persist, I can't listen to podcasts in my Ubuntu system. I've downloaded VLC Player and did finally get it to play your shows only after I fed into the player the URLs. It doesn't work like Windows M Player that automatically reads the URL it needs. Is that the way Ubuntu works? None of the players, Amarok, GStreamer, play MP3s. That's the major reason that keeps me on Windows. I can't listen to my shows. I know I have all the plugins required for VLC Player to work according to them. VLC Player is supposed to work with Linux and play anything needed. Hope to hear more about this problem and using VMware to run Linux. Since Chess has retired, really miss him, you guys are now my number one in learning about Linux. Keep training us. God knows we need it. John in Dallas.
Thanks, John.
Yes, thanks.
And John, I'll address a couple of points here. You said, I've always been so frustrated with Linux since it was so difficult to understand and use. And I wrote back saying, it may seem that way in first. It's a change from something that you are used to. Remember that you have help at your fingertips and keep an open mind. The blue screen of death contains a lot of code and information that always translates to, you are screwed. My experience is that I can easily find solutions for whatever obstacle comes up in Linux. So hang in there and look for the support. It's there.
Yep.
And the next thing I'll address, you said you don't have the problems and dangers in trashing your system by installing a Linux distro. And I answered, I eased into Linux by first going dual boot from an Ubuntu Live CD. Nothing got trashed. I still had my Windows available for a while until I decided to wean myself. If that scares you too much, take a baby step. Wubi, W-U-B-I, is a Windows application that lets you run Ubuntu on your Microsoft machine. If you hate it, you can uninstall it just like any other Windows package. Next you said, none of the players, Amarok, GStreamer, play MP3s. I answered, take it easy on yourself and use google.com/Linux. Type something like, Amarok play MP3 Ubuntu. Better yet, go to the Ubuntu guide, and we will put a link to that in the show notes. That page answers just about any common question. You're going to love it. Hope that helped, and keep the faith.
Yeah, John, I'm glad you found us on Computer America. We've received a lot of new visitors to the website and to the podcast as a result of my appearances on the show. Thanks very much as well for forwarding the tutorial on installing Ubuntu under VMware. I agree, it's very straightforward, and I'm sure we'll be referring our listeners to it in the future. I think, though, that some of your problems related to the audio may be due to the fact that you're running it under VMware. I'm not sure, though. Carrie at Computer America forwarded us a question on Ubuntu multimedia support that's very similar to the one that you asked. In fact, if you were the one who asked the question at Computer America, you will receive the same answer twice here and the one that I gave on Computer America. If not, here's the answer that I provided to Carrie to forward to his listener from the show. I wrote, there are two alternatives. The first is to switch to a Linux distribution that truly is pre-installed with multimedia support. The second is an easy way to get them installed on your existing Ubuntu distribution. It's available in Gutsy Given 7.10 and the Hardy Heron 8.04 version as well. The first option is probably not the one you want, since you've already got Ubuntu installed, and to switch to another distribution that's based on Ubuntu like Linux Mint probably isn't something you would want to do at this point. The second option is to install the Ubuntu Restricted Extras package from within Ubuntu. According to the Ubuntu documentation, installing this package will pull in support for MP3 playback and decoding, support for various other audio formats, Microsoft fonts, Java, Flash, LAME, and DVD playback. This is how I installed multimedia support on my Ubuntu/Kubuntu machine. It enabled Amarok, Audacity, VLC, and just about everything else that I use. I've written an article on the Going Linux website describing the step-by-step. I'll include a link, of course, in the show notes. Check it out and enjoy what you've been missing.
Kedar writes in. Hey, Kedar. Hey, how come Tom's name doesn't show up in the artist section of the MP3 file? Why the discrimination? Tom, we're with you, and we will revolt. Love the show. Keep it up.
Okay.
Am I excluded from the ID3 under artist? Is that
hey, Kedar, I'm not trying to slight my partner, Tom. Actually, depending on what you're using to play the file back, you may have already seen Tom listed in the artist tag all along. If your player reads the ID3 tags directly from the MP3 file, it lists Larry Bushy and Tom Chadwar as the artists. But if you subscribe to the podcast and your player reads the XML feed rather than the MP3 file, it may pick up the author tag from the feed instead. Only my name appears there.
Oh, hang on. I'm checking my contract. Okay. Yeah. All right. I see it here.
Yep. It's on line 42, paragraph 756.
Subsection C. All right. Okay. Thanks, Kedar. Next up, we got Chris. Chris says, hi, guys. Hey, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
I do enjoy your podcast. I installed Ubuntu on my old Toshiba laptop. After a week's worth of fighting with drivers, works fine. My wife wanted to give it a try on her compact desktop model SR1520NX, so I attempted to set her up with a dual boot so that she could migrate to it from Windows. Ubuntu installed, but I ran into the following problems. Number one, the graphics were erratic. It frequently would not update the display, or it would misposition the entire screen. Number two, Windows would no longer boot. I could access the Windows files from Linux. Number three, Ubuntu became unstable and locked up frequently. She used Ubuntu for about a week until it became too unstable, so I tried to recover the Windows partition. I did not use the compact restore feature because I believed that it would destroy the Ubuntu partition, so I reinstalled XP on the Windows partition. That worked, but it wiped out my boot menu. I can no longer access the Linux partition where she has a week's worth of work. Any ideas? Keep up the good work. Chris. I think he killed Grub, huh?
I think that's exactly what he did. So, Chris, I'm sorry you didn't have a great experience with your wife's dual boot system. According to the system specs, her compact Presario system is a 1.8 gigahertz AMD Sempron processor with 512 megabytes of RAM, the option to install up to 2 gigabytes, an integrated SIS Mirage 2 video card, and 160 gigabyte hard drive. So it's not an old computer by any stretch.
No, that's not too shabby at all.
Mm-hmm.
And we think you were right not to use Compaq's recovery features because it would have killed everything on the Linux drive. Although Linux doesn't care whether it's installed first or last on a hard drive that's shared with other operating systems, Windows makes a point of assuming that it is the only operating system on the system, so it must be installed first. That is why when you reinstalled XP, it wiped out your Grub bootloader and replaced it with the Windows one. I guess Microsoft feels like, why would anyone ever want something other than Windows installed on a computer?
Yeah, careful with the bashing there now, Tom.
I can see their point.
Yes, yes.
I can empathize.
Proprietary companies. The easiest way to recover the work that your wife did on the Linux partition is to boot from the Ubuntu Live CD you used to install the operating system in the first place. You can manually open the Linux partition in the Nautilus file browser and copy the files to an external drive, a CD, or even mount the Windows drive and copy the files there. Once that's done, you can reinstall Ubuntu, or you can eliminate the Linux partition entirely and return it to Windows if you want to give up on Linux, or try another Linux distribution altogether. The computer is fairly new, as I mentioned earlier, but you may be having a hardware compatibility issue. I've read some Ubuntu forum posts claiming problems with the SIS video chipset when using GNOME and KDE. Similar problems to yours have been listed on the linuxquestions.org site. I'll include for you a link to that particular post. The suggestion has been made to try a non-GNOME, non-KDE window manager like XFCE. Zubuntu uses that. You might want to try Zubuntu on the machine.
And one more thing to think about. If you boot the Live CD and then go into /media and identify the Linux partition, then you can go to your terminal and type sudo, S-U-D-O, space, C-H-R-O-O-T, space, /media/, and then the name of that drive. And what that will do is put you into that drive's environment as if you had booted from that drive.
Okay, that sounds like a wise suggestion, Tom.
Hope it helps.
Yeah. Finally, Dan, a listener who called in at the end of my last appearance on Computer America, was having trouble setting VLC as the default media player in Ubuntu. I came across a post on the UbuntuGuide.org wiki. I'll include a link on the show notes. Although it doesn't address this issue directly, it does offer some information that might shed some light on the issue and might actually provide a solution that also works for Dan.
Yeah, and I see that the article reads, Totem is the default program for DVD playback in Hardy, and there's no obvious way to change it. A lot of tips that worked in previous versions no longer work. The main problem is that VLC does not register itself as a DVD-capable application.
Right, and the article provides some step-by-step instructions on getting VLC set up so that it works as a default application. So if Dan is listening, we'll have a link to the wiki article in the show notes.
If you're running Ubuntu GNOME, you can go to your Nautilus browser, right-click on any kind of a file, and hit Properties. Once that window opens, hit Open With in the tab up on the top, and you can control which program is in charge of that type of file. So if you do it on an AVI file, then all AVI files will open with whatever you specified there.
Well, that's another fine tip you've provided us with, Tom.
Huh? Am I good or what?
I like it.
So, I think we should wrap it up.
I think we should.
In our next episode, we are going to talk about getting podcasts delivered to you automatically and other stuff you need to know about using your media player with Linux. Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information and detailed instructions with screenshots.
Email us with comments, questions, and suggestions. Send us an audio comment by email or leave it on your listener feedback line. We'll play it on the show. The feedback line is +1 206 350 5251. And our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com.
And you can download the episodes from the website, or you can use the Flash Player to play them right there on the page. You can also get future episodes delivered directly to your computer automatically as soon as a new episode is available. Instructions on how to do that are on the website and are what our next episode is about.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.